Cool! Hi! Mons and Timo and Ricke is back. And Malmö Civic Club is cruising this podcast world from our beautiful little studio here at Stadshuset. I feel so privileged every time we go in this soundproof room. The beauty of today is that we have invited...
A guest.
Yeah, a guest.
Yeah, Cameron. Hi, Cameron.
Hi.
Hi. And Cameron is visiting us from Helsingborg. You're part of Hubiki Works.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
How long have you been there, Cameron? And who are you?
Wow, so many big questions. So, hi everyone. My name is Cameron. I work in Helsingborg Stad. I work for I have a small team which is called Design and Innovation, which I'm head of. And Design Innovation is a part of two teams that are sitting in a new working space, which is called HBG Works, which is a sort of an innovation hub. And we sit under the department called Digitaliseringsavdelningen.
Same as us.
Same as us, yes.
Which is a part of Stadsledningsförvaltningen, which are one of nine departments that works for the city. And our department's main focus is to both lead and support the other eight departments.
Okay.
Is it like us? Can you decide, or you're just there to lead? It's like we if one department says no, we can't do anything about it. They are allowed to say no, basically.
Yes, there's a lot of gray zones. Yeah. It's there's a lot of twists between the lead part and the supporting part. Sometimes yes, we can push for something bigger. We just need to sell it in, because we believe it's a better choice. And sometimes we just have to support whatever decision is made and go with that.
Yeah.
I guess that's how life works.
So you sit centrally.
Yes.
Yes. And how does projects, how do they come in? Like
for HBG Works?
Yeah.
HBG Works is quite new. We started off, the story goes that it started off in beginning of 2018. There was discussion about people who done a lot of talked about the proof of concepts. I was let's do a lot of proof of concepts, and I was like, okay. And I was one of it was in my team that was supposed to run all these proof of concepts. And we were like, okay, how does this work? How are we supposed to do? And we're like, okay, let's create a team that could actually start building proof of concepts. So that conversation was happened. At the same time, the city has I used to have an external advisory board. And they were talking about different kind of areas where they would be advising it. And at the same time, one of the advice that came along was that you guys need to have some sort of innovation hub service happening. Oh, okay. And there were more people have different kind of needs that could have associated with an innovation hub. So that's how they kind of, okay, we need to do something about this. Mm-hmm. And somewhere around beginning of May, I can't remember the exact date, the politicians decided that, yes, there's a new... there's a new request from the politics to create or to address a need the city has to move things forward. Seeing challenges, finding them, and helping those, like a muscle to help that. And that was the beginning. I decided that would be the innovation hub is about. Mm. So it started off as Hubben. That was what it was called, the working name. And somewhere around, I think it was after summer, there was a naming. So now we can't call it Hubben. So there was a new name called HBG Works. Mm-hmm. And then we officially moved in, or unofficially, or officially moved into the building in, was it February?
So you said sit in a separate building, or?
We sit in a separate building. We moved in an office with two floors.
Yeah.
And that office was done in, beginning of February, was done. So then we moved in. So we moved in from, this is kind of complicated, but from Digitaliseringsavdelningen, two teams moved in. It was my team and another team moved in.
But so be more concrete. So you see these challenges of the city.
Yes.
How does it work? So a department of the city has a challenge.
Right.
And they come to you.
And they come to us. And the first thing we try to do is how do we work with that? So we...
And what can a challenge be?
A challenge could be like anything that they have. It could be something about... a challenge could be like from school. They want to use, like the case we're doing now, they want to see how AI could benefit kids, young kids, in preschool. and help the teachers there. Mm. That could be one case. Mm.
So how do you do with a case like that?
So that case specifically was actually the case I need to a little bit refer back, because it was like we offered a thing called accelerated process, mm-hmm. which was a hypothesis. We had a test. Let's say, okay, well, any kind of project that we do probably has three different kind of phases. One is an explorative phase. We need to understand what is it they want to do. And then we test something small. And if that works, we scale it up to a bigger test. And so that was what the thing offered. And the first department that's trying that is the school department, which probably was pretty cool. They have a lot of needs, and they're the biggest department that we have. Mm-hmm. So we did a two-day workshop that we found out with, and there were four challenges. Well, there were actually six challenges, and there was four teams that could be built on-site to tackle these challenges. Of those four seats, three teams were created. So three challenges of those six were taken on board. And then by the end of the second day, Tony, who is the head of the department of school, chose which challenge he wanted to continue. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that challenge was to do with AI and preschool. Mm-hmm.
So they actually came with no brief initially. It was more like, let's explore what we could do.
They have so many things that they want to help with.
Yeah. Mm.
So we try to narrow it down. Mm. So we say, okay, look, so a lot of people asking like more like these kind of roadmaps. Mm. Can you please help us create a roadmap? And we interpret that as more like a backlog. Create all the different kinds of needs they have, challenges. In some cases, we don't have that, or something could be a challenge today. And then we ask them to prioritize those, because we can't do them all. So select one. And that was the process of accelerated process that they chose initially, one with AI. So we started that one off. We did a design sprint, which no one had never done before. Mm-hmm. We did the four-day design sprint. So we tested it. We built a prototype in Keynote, and then tested it and video recorded it on five-year-olds to try it out. And then we decided, cool, this actually, there is something to this. Mm-hmm. So now we're in the third phase. We're still in the pilot. In the third phase, which we call the build sprint. And a build sprint is that we scale things up, the test a bit, but we say that the build sprint could never be longer than 12 weeks. Mm. That's it. Mm. And the reason for it is multiple things. One of them is that there's a lot of asks that just nobody takes them back. So the departments ask, and it stays within our team, and we just still have to run with them, because no one's taking ownership, taking them back. We said, okay, 12 weeks, that's it. After that, it's all yours. Mm. So that's one thing. The other thing is that we believe that in 12 weeks, anything could be done. So, and we say, okay, if that's the fixed time, maximum 12 weeks, then the scope has to be varied. Mm. So that's what we're trying now.
And the deliverable would be then a high fidelity prototype or something?
It could be anything. Could be, so there's a lot of, because we're part of the digitalization department, which people think it has to be digital. And so far it's been digital. But we're not excluding that it doesn't have to be digital. Mm. Mm. Anyway, it's an MVP we try to make. And sometimes it can be digital, sometimes it's not. At the moment, the one we're running is digital. Mm. So we're creating this we call Laiban, which is a robot. And the purpose of the robot is to help kids answer simple questions that they have. Mm. Because the challenge they have is that sometimes when you have one pedagogue, I can't remember the English word for it.
Pedagogue.
I don't
know. One teacher.
They're sitting, and sometimes they have this kind of moment with a kid, and they get disrupted because another kid asks a simple question. Mm. So they thought maybe if someone else could start answering those simple questions, they could have more time. Another thing they want to help is that trying to teach kids how to dress. So depending on the weather, what kind of clothes do I need to wear?
Wow.
Okay.
Interesting.
And the other thing we tried actually in the smaller design sprint was that we also tried the whole thing that if it's personalized and they can ask who picks me up today, because then we have to prep it. Obviously, we have to ask the question from get the approval from their parents, and they get their pictures, and they can see the picture, and it was quite nice. But we removed that from the next, and the reason for that was it becomes quite complex. Not so much from a technical point of view, but from a logistic point of view. Mm. Because who picks you up could change. Mm. Mm. And then we thought there's a risk that Laiban sometimes would lie. And we didn't want to go to that path. Okay. Well, Laiban told me my mom's going to pick me up at 4, but dad's here at 4:30.
And how does a team look like in HPG Works? How many are you in total, and how many would you be working on this project, for example?
On this project, we're three.
Yeah.
People. I'm supporting, but there's two people. There's Christina, which is a service designer, who's working on it, and there's Nicholas, who's a developer working on it.
And then someone from the school, I guess.
And then there's four people from the school working. Mm-hmm.
So they're more like a board that you report to, or are they?
No, they're actually part of it. So they're helping us with the content. They're helping us with that. Mm-hmm. They also have homework now to figure out where to place, because this is going to be run on an iPad. So where does this iPad get placed? Where does Liban live, mm-hmm. so to speak? Mm-hmm. So they have to figure those things out.
And that team from the school side,
yeah.
like how do they get involved, and does it change? Could it change during the way, or
how do you mean?
It's just something like a problem we've seen a lot here. Is that maybe people that we need to work with or need to understand how it's working or something like this. They want to be involved, but sometimes maybe they feel like it's not part of their job.
Right.
So they don't feel safe. Maybe. So how do you convince them to this is okay, and
or they don't have time, and it takes 4 weeks before they can meet them next time.
Well, the thing is that was one of the challenges that we talked about when we started with HBG Works, was that one is an obviously the time perspective, that people just ask for something and they never kind of take it back. So it lies on and it becomes förvaltning. And that just stacks up on new people that we don't have any more time. And the second part was that people feel frustrated that they want to help people in departments, but sometimes those questions that departments have asked hasn't been raised all the way to the top. So someone's boss doesn't know about the project, where it could be. And when they get noticed about it, they go like, oh, well, maybe you shouldn't prioritize that, where it could be. And that becomes a frustration. It goes like, oh, then halfway through the project, it kind of dies. So one of the things we said, when we were delivering the accelerator process, we said that, well, the head of that department needs to be aware of it and needs to approve it.
Yeah.
And then it's up to the head of the department to manage our expectations.
Yeah.
So in terms of this project, Tony has been really helpful with his team.
So you just ask them,
we need this. And he goes, fine, I'll find those schools for you. So it comes top down in that sense.
And then, but it's not like, so the people that you're collaborating with in the schools, they are basically dedicating, let's say, 10% of the time or something. It's not that you have them, two of them full time sitting with you.
Yeah, we have asked. We didn't have ask anyone actually to full time with us. What we've done kind of now is that the build sprint that we started yesterday was that we're going to do 2 weeks of building, and then they're going to help up. We're going to have a couple more meetings, and then we're going to try. The team on our end is going to build, and then they're going to they're going to create some of the content, the people from the schools, so the four, and then they're also going to rig things up on their end, the schools. And then there's going to be 2 weeks of testing. And during the testing period, we don't do as much as they do. It's the reverse. We want them to observe the kids and see how things work and sometimes sort of lead in and help in. And at the same time, there was another twist to it. And it was that we thought that, well, I wonder what kids would start asking if you could tell that this is a computer, this is a person, and you can start talking to it. What kind of question would they ask? So during the design sprint, when we tested, we were like, well, maybe the kids want to ask more questions. We said, okay, like, we have the camera, we have the microphone. Let's just pretend someone with the voice is Liban. And they can go on in and start asking questions, talk to this, and see what kind of questions they start asking. We thought that was really interesting because there was a lot of interesting questions people were asking.
So you just had like a hangout
completely. Yeah, exactly. They saw just the screen with the character, and that's it. And they can start asking questions like, how old are you? Who's your mom? Who's your dad? Obviously, where do you live? And someone even asked about what their code into their house was, which was a little bit very specific kind of questions. So during this build sprint, we're also going to test that what we call. We called Flygtornet, the moment, which is that we're going to place an iPad with a screen, and then 1 hour sessions a day, they could talk to this voice, to this character.
Yeah.
And there will be one teacher on the other end in some room being that voice, just to see what kind of questions, because we're kind of curious to see if there's anything else Liban could be doing, or should be doing, or should not be doing.
Or even the other way around.
So we're doing actually two tests at the same time.
Cool. cool. Yeah. And flygtornet translated is control tower, I think.
Yes,
so the thanks. English yeah. listeners get the clue of that.
Cool. Cameron, I want to go back to talk a little bit about you and what made you join the city in the first place and, yeah, about your experience.
But my experience? I joined Helsingborg Stad in November 2017. I'd previously worked with Helsingborg Stad before because I used to work with us too, and us too still is doing stuff.
Yeah. And so for the listeners, we have worked together.
Yes.
Me and Kamran and Riga yes. on the side. So we yes. come from the same studio here in Malmö yes. where we used to build products for big companies, yeah. basically.
Exactly. Yes. And... so we're doing multiple projects, and there was or that project got Helsingborg, and there was an ask from Helsingborg Stad to do a workshop, which is about, it was five departments, and we're talking about the city has a vision of 2035, but they wanted to make a digitalization vision for 2025, so they asked for about us running a workshop, and I was running that workshop together with Anna Felicia, I think mm-hmm. It was a 2-day workshop, and so I got a chance to meet Martin, which is my boss now, Martin Gill. Mm. And I thought, that's kind of an interesting place. Mm. And somewhere around when we're looking for a head of the digital development team, which was a sort of a new team happening, when I read the story about what they're trying to achieve, I thought, it feels like they have the right kind of mindset, and there's some sort of movement happening in that city. And I really like the challenge of they're going to try to go somewhere. So I thought that would be interesting. And since I already knew Martin a little bit, I thought, I can vouch for him. We're kind of on the same compass, kind of. So that could work. Mm. So, and that was it.
Yeah. And what kind of thoughts did you have about joining the public sector before? Like, what were your pre-assumptions? And
wow, the pre... Yeah, I still get sometimes ping from old friends. They go like, "What? You work for the city? What happened?"
Yeah.
My pre-assumptions was probably one was like, "Okay, well, they're not in the forefront as from the private sector, in both in terms of tech perspective, but also probably from methods and process, and financially, they're probably not as strong as the private sector is." So I had those things going on, and I felt like, well, there will be a lot of more politics happening probably. So I need to figure those things and pieces out. So it's probably going to be much more slower. But when I started, things actually was quite fast. The whole innovation hub, from the time they started to talk about until the politicians kind of voted for it, it went quite fast. And then, like, the only reason why I moved into the new building in February was because of it took the construction company longer time to fix those bits and pieces.
Yeah. Okay. So things are actually moving quite fast.
Things are moving really fast. And it's a really nice kind of environment because there's a lot of people that want to do stuff. Mm. And they're really, like, passionate about
it. I think, like, the question I really want to hear is, and the frustration I can feel, and I think you felt sometimes too, is, like, coming from the private sector, working the way that we used to do at us too, working with those large, large companies, global brands, basically, top up there. And now you're working with a municipality. And it was almost like you were a little bit shameful there when you said your friends were, you're in the public sector. It's almost like that kind of thing to it. Why was that, Cameron? And also on the other side, because I also can feel sometimes that this feeling of being different is so strong in the municipality that they're saying, no, we're not like the companies.
Right.
But from us, from a digital perspective, a lot of times I can see it's exactly the same questions. It's exactly the same problems we're trying to solve in one way, right?
I mean,
tell us a little bit about
try to answer all those questions.
Yeah.
So the first one about the being embarrassed. Yeah. Well, I mean... I'm not going to be ashamed about it, of course. It's like I've never, like, even when I was a kid, started first job and all that, people go, if you work for the municipality, it's going to be like, it's a typical stereotype. There'll be 10 people standing and one person working, that kind of mentality. And he goes, like, yeah, when you don't want to do anything, you go work for the city. That's all safe, it's all good. And from that perspective, maybe...
Is that true? Like, do you feel that is true?
No, that's definitely not true.
Okay.
There's parts of that, definitely. So it's not that that stereotype is completely flawed.
Uh-huh.
But there are parts of it. But there's a lot of things. There's a lot of passion. There's a lot of willpower that wants to go.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can see that all that willpower, unfortunately, is placed in a place where you can't do much about it.
Mm.
That's frustrating to see. People that really want to do something, but they're kind of stuck because they were kind of. So that was one part. Of it. Second part, in terms of difference between the private and the public. The biggest difference, I guess, is the politics.
Mm.
And the sentence that people can use, is that the best thing you can do with the taxpayers' money?
Yeah.
Besides those two, there's not much difference. I mean, Helsing Voice Thought is a big organization, 10,000. And it's not unique in that way, in any kind of company that same size in the private sector. Of course, you're going to have a lot of hierarchy things happening. Of course, you're going to have internal politicians and people's own agendas, etc. And I think those are just natural. I don't think there's a much difference between the private and public. The different parts, what I kind of see is that sometimes it's more about this. You can sometimes get the argument, well, it's a taxpayer's money. And that could be used in both ways. Sometimes it could be used as a strong case to stop something or change something. You go, look at that, that's a good. And sometimes it feels like it's feels more like a personal kind of agenda. Well, it doesn't align with mine, so I'm going to pull that card and say, is that the best thing you can do with taxpayers' money?
How is it with the tools that people need within a city compared to the tools that the digital tools that a worker in a company needs? Right, because we've seen the tools that huge companies use, and we've seen the tools that the city needs.
Right,
is it different, or are they most of the time the same?
No, I don't see it as much difference. I mean, everyone, as long as you go big corp, you're always spinning around the Microsoft world, right? So it's everyone's using the Office.
Exactly, so right?
If you want to tell something, it has to be a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
If you want to come in conversation, but you have to be an email, and then you have to book people in calendar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the calendar challenge is big. That's probably, I will say, if there's one thing that's the biggest kind of obstacle of movement, it's the calendar.
Okay.
If you wanna have a meeting with more than five people, trying to figure that calendar, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
It's just let's meet, if you just say, oh great, we should meet those people tomorrow.
Yeah,
good luck.
Yes.
But how is it when it comes to the things that you build, the systems that you use? I mean, the baseline, of course, I agree, come on. I mean, I think 95% of what the city do, if they're really skilled in Word, Excel, and forms, we could sort 95% of what we do. It's only text, numbers, and questions that we need to be. There's nothing, we don't do any hard tech or any big stuff in here. It's just putting in some numbers, putting in some text, and categorizing it with
and
metadata.
And I don't think we should be doing any.
Neither do I. No.
Like it's very human problems, and they maybe can be automized sometimes, but often they need to be solved by in a human way. So,
but a lot of times I see the city has bought those specially designed systems only for almost their little municipality or city.
Right.
When we know that, you know, huge companies have the same issues. There are plenty of tools out there,
right,
super cheap, well-designed, working perfectly. But still, we think we're so special that we buy this little niche product that you know.
I haven't really been part of any kind of purchases of a bigger systems. I'm aware of there are some systems that I've heard more than once, and it's not been in a moving kind of special way. It's always been a frustration, and I think that for any kind of large organization that's not built on digital, it's always going to be that, right? Because I think there's a lot of tools people need to use on a daily basis to get their analog kind of work done, because that's where they see the value. But they have to figure some digital systems out to be able to do it. And I think from that point of view, yes, there is. You can do a lot of improvements. Like, for instance, people go, okay, well, I do this. This takes me, I don't know, 20 minutes every day, and it's a hassle. Then I can see definitely that helping those people out from a digital point of view could be very beneficial. But in a big run is, I think that there's a lot of there are a lot of needs out there, and everyone can't be heard. There's a lot of things that get missed. People do purchase system that no one has figured out. Oh, well, have you thought about this and that? And I think that at some point that with some of these things we try to address, say that, look, let's not put any guilt on who bought what. It is what it is. But please don't buy anything new. Let's figure out if there's something else we can do that's cheaper or more efficient. Because if you buy, for instance, an economic system, if you buy a new one, you're probably going to get like few check marks. You go, like, great, we're going to have that. But then you're also going to have those other things. So it's never going to be a perfect system.
Exactly.
So let's figure something else out to start helping out. And I think that conversation needs to happen more often. Okay. And I think it has to be, and that conversation has to happen much more openly. I mean, like, the stuff that Helsingborg Stad is in terms of challenge with systems, they're not unique in any way to Helsingborg Stad. They're probably not even unique to Swedish municipalities. So, I mean, there's something around that I think at some point we need to start finding.
There's a huge misconception here that I'm trying to understand why it's there, but I don't, right?
So, exactly. So it's more about helping and for us to find a new way to start collaborating across borders. Because otherwise, it's like it's because if everyone's going to put their, based on how big they are, put their pot of money into a system and just purchase that, and everyone else is doing the same thing, there's a lot of money being spent. You're like, okay, well, maybe some people should collaborate. Maybe we should build something on top of old systems that we collaborate on that. I mean, there's a lot of that kind of things. And since everyone talks about we have to be more efficient, cost efficient, usually that's about, we need to start making those conversations happen. And I don't see enough of those.
But I'm also wondering, because I see this all over the place. It's kind of the belief of we are special. We need, you know, and then you try to figure out what is it that we're afraid of? Why are we so special? And they always say, no, but it's secrecy. It's classified as secrecy and so on. And I'm just like, well, when we worked with those large companies, there was a lot of things that were super secret too. And it's still, we just used Google Cloud or we just used Microsoft tools in those cases too, right? The only thing we needed, and what we figured out now, is that the only thing we need to do is encrypt the communication and we need two-way authentication.
Right.
Which might sound weird to people, but anyone who has used BankID has used two-way authentication, and it's standard today to encrypt the information. So there's nothing to really talk about there.
No.
And then we talk a lot about GDPR and what, and we also need to communicate and say everything is allowed to ask for.
Right.
It's more the people who took benefit and asked for a lot of data about you that they wanted to use sometime in the future. That is not allowed anymore. We need to ask you for the data, and we need to know what we're going to use it for. But we're still allowed to ask for anything.
Yeah.
And I think those misconceptions are really hurting us, and it makes us go buy specially designed things because we think we're special. But in the end of the day, if you want to publish open data, open data can just be publishing a Word document with sharing the link.
Right?
It's like this, it's this really strange misconception. No, we need an open data platform. No, you need to put the link to this file on your web page. That's open data, right? And how do you deal with that? And how do you navigate that?
Come on. I think there was a lot of good stuff there. And also things I'm sure I see the same way. So
I think
some part of this this story is that it's hard. It's hard to navigate. It's hard sometimes even navigate smaller projects with multiple departments within the same city. It's hard. It's hard to navigate in terms of calendar wise, in terms of ambition wise, in terms of there's a lot of things that goes. So I understand there's a benefit sometimes to take shortcuts and buy something because it's just too much of a work opening it up. Because that conversation is hard. Because you go, okay, if one department can't figure out the purchasing between the different kind of units within that department, then how would two the departments try to collaborate, and three, and if you go to two different cities to try it? I understand that there's a hurdle, and there's a quick way about just buying something.
So when you come and say the calendar problem, it also interests me a lot. Is that a leadership and organizational issue that the municipalities has? Meaning that was it easier for you to get hold of the right people in a big corporation that you worked with before, because they had clearer prioritization, clearer mandate, and etc. than what people in this municipality have? Is that the issue with the calendar issue?
I don't think so. I think the calendar challenge is that as soon as you become a big organization, it is a hassle. Mm-hmm. Because if you want, for a lot of people, I mean, if you want to get stuff done, you book someone in the calendar. Mm-hmm. Great. So the calendar becomes almost like a task by itself. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm dedicating my work to that. That's right. So I need to book those people up. I think there's a lot of things we can do in terms of improving that people don't. Everything does not have to equal an hour meeting. Like, that's one of them. Do you really need? And we're trying to talk about it a little bit now, but we don't have any kind of solutions to it. But I think that is one. Second thing is, like, I think that in the same way we book people up, we need to book time to not be able to be booked. Mm. Okay, this is free time. So we introduced this as a test. It's become called Fridagen. Mm-hmm. Some of us use it. We talked about in our digitalization departments, head ofs. We talked about that maybe we should have one day that we book that you're not able to book anything. Mm. So I have it on Fridays. So Friday is a day I try to not allow anyone to book in my calendar. Mm. That means I'm on site mostly. Mm. And I can't be booked. So I can have this kind of dialogue happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be one approach too. But I haven't really, like, we talked about one idea could be like a calendar bomb, for instance. I want to book a meeting. So I book people, and if they're not available, I could use an action called a bomb. And I would bomb everyone else's calendar, which allowed me to book my meeting over everyone else in a way to be able to do something. I mean, if you're going to book 20 people, that's a hurdle. Mm. But no, we don't have it. But so I think that in terms of the challenge, I don't think that the private sector has any better solutions. Mm. It's just big organizations is tough. Mm. But I definitely see it as a really annoying pain because things take time.
Mm. Yes.
Because The thing that you touched upon before with the passion, there's a lot of passionate people in here, but you also mentioned that it's not a digital organization by trade, so to speak. Because that is my kind of last resort as I see it, where it sometimes fails. I've been in so many meetings where we're 8 people in that meeting room, smart, really passionate people, really want to make a difference, really want to change something, and we arrive at a conclusion that this is what we should do.
Right.
And then there is no one who can raise their hand and say, I can do it, because they are not the craftsmen of digital products.
Right.
Is that something you can feel is the same, or is it different in Helsingborg Stad, where you have craftsmen who actually can do the things that we believe are best for them?
We have those challenges as well. Definitely we have those challenges. I haven't seen that many times when people maybe don't raise their hands. In specific cases, when it comes in general cases, like we did a meeting now a couple of months ago, actually, we talked about, look, so everyone's been really good at working with the department in terms of their digital channels. It could be e-service or whatever it could be. They're working on it. But at some point, we need to start to see it as an ecosystem. So from a user perspective or a Helsingborgare perspective, there are some disruptions there in between. You go, okay, you go to that digitally, and then you go, oh, we have to call someone else, and you go off that, you go something else. So we need to make that happen. And we had this meeting, and it was a little bit confusing at the beginning, but then people kind of landed, yes, there's a value that we actually take care of our Helsingborg all the way through. Mm. But then the question comes, so who's going to run it? Mm. So, and that became one of the obvious cases, I guess, that... Mm. Yes, sometimes we don't want always things to land on the digitalization department. Mm. Sometimes we want someone else to take it. Mm. But
I think you had a pretty fun solution to that. Like, or at least it's something that you flagged, it sounds like, in Hobbygy Works, which is that you, as I understood, you build for X amount of time like test and build, and then you let it loose for some time until you let someone else take it over, and if no one takes it over, then no one owns it, sort of, as I understood, or...
Yes, yeah, so pretty much we're saying, like, with School for Developing, and we're saying that we're going to help you out doing this.
Mm.
But it's always community that whatever they choose us to work on, it is theirs.
Exactly.
We're helping.
Yeah.
It's not ours.
Mm.
The Leiban concept is not ours. Mm. It's School for Developing.
Mm.
It's,
yeah.
It's their own. They need to own it. And they want to own it. So it's more about being really clear about, so it doesn't go as like, well, can someone else ask about this specific? No, it's theirs. Yeah. It has to be.
Yeah, because that's also a problem we've been facing a couple of times now.
Yeah.
Like, who owns the services? Who owns right. this problem? Where does it belong? Who can make the decision in the end? Who can kill it? Like,
yeah. Who can pull the plug?
Yes, and that's something I've been missing a lot. Like, who service owners, product owners in
right.
the city? Do you think there could be a solution to that problem? Or
I'm not sure there is a solution. We're trying this at least. We're trying to be very open about saying, look, we can help out, but we need to be clear about it's not ours.
Mm.
Yeah.
We're supporting and we're taking lead in some parts of it to
like
help you run
it. Yeah.
But it cannot be ours.
Mm.
And I think that, I'm not saying that everyone thinks that, but there are still some people I sometimes feel like that they think that everything to do with digitalization is a digitalization department's ownership.
Mm.
Mm.
And for me, it's like, we have no ambition of making Hobiger Works the central of everything. We have no ambition to make a digital change, the ambition of central everything. And I think it has to be owned by different departments. And the ambition and vision is that each department has their own digitalization, have their own way of Hobiger Works.
Mm.
Because it's Hobiger Works, it's about the people and about the passion, it's about the way of working, right?
Yeah.
The process and methods.
Yeah.
And I think that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to create this kind of way of working.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that, and the way we wanted to scale is that it scales that people, right, I like that bit and pieces, and I like that, and start owning and taking it back to their departments and start running with it.
But how do you, because it is a process and method
yeah.
or organizational issue, and I think Rigi is pointing it out as well. It's like the problem we have is the goal setting of those organizations or those projects or those methods and
right.
processes. So how does the goal setting now look for Leiban? Where do we, because I think we end up starting a lot of initiatives
yeah.
that we never close.
Right.
Right? We buy a lot of software that are used by two people and we pay a lot of money for it still.
Yeah.
And it just keeps on going. There is no one saying that, well, we tried and now we're going to close it. The question of killing things is quite acute in the organization because
yeah.
the goal setting is very wrong. And we've seen it. It's like internally here, we got some shit because we had a single sign-on thing
right.
where we want one sign-in to all the tools that we have.
Yeah.
And yes, we have it, right? It's there, but it doesn't work with all the tools.
No.
So it doesn't really work. So a goal setting would not be to have a single sign-on. But a goal setting would be 90% of the services that the city has
right.
should be accessed by single sign-on. The same is with the e-services. We're super happy that we have an e-service platform, but we didn't really care about the goal setting of, well, by 2020, 60% of all the services we have should have an e-service
right.
formula to it. Like, and those kind of goal settings is what I'm missing. We are so happy that we bought the software or bought
yeah.
the system or that we have started a process. But there isn't a goal. It's more important as a goal to start a process than it is to have usage of the thing that we're
right.
trying to produce. So what is the goal of Leiban? What will happen after 12 weeks? What will make it continue? What will make it stop? And how will it live on when it exits kind of the building or the,
right.
the building phase?
There was a lot of good questions there. In terms of Leiban, where, as I said, it's part of that we call the accelerated process. And the accelerated process is with the School for Developing is our first pilot.
Mm. Okay.
So we don't really know how things are going to progress.
Oh.
But the way we saw was that is that we build it now and we did one testing, but that testing was at our place, so to speak. So five-year-olds came to our place. It was a very sort of specific kind of setup. Yes, you can learn some from it, But because of all the setup, it's a very specific one to say that, okay, that reflects exactly how things will work if it will place in their actual environment. So now we're trying to test that out in their own environment and see how that works. And we don't really know how that's going to work, so to speak.
So depending on that, of course.
Depending on that, we'll decide. The idea was that the idea with the accelerator process was that I feel like I'm doing some sort of commercial for it. But it's not a good name, but it's a working title. But the idea was that for each of these phases, there's a value created. So the first one, which is about exploration, was the value was that even if no one continues with it, at least the value was about the conversation, the alignment, and there's a common backlog. So everyone being heard as much as we could. And someone's talk, well, in terms of prioritization, this is our prioritization. And the second was a design sprint.
So what you leave there is the prioritized list,
the
basically.
The prioritized list and the alignment that happened in that room during those conversations.
Good.
Of problems.
Of problems. Yes. And talk about
what is the most important problem for us
and how do
as
we
a department.
See it? Exactly. And how do we see it? The second part was about the design sprint was that, okay, so design sprint came a lot into mind. It was that, once again, the calendar, do we book things and do stuff? Like we like us two did it. Like
it's more how to work.
Yeah. So the way us two did it could work on a small scale, but if you try to do it with a lot of people in a big organization, it's kind of difficult. So we thought that okay, at least it will be easier maybe to get 4 or 5 people for 4 days than trying to during a period of time book them up because then you get 3 hours here, you get 4 hours there, and for each of these meetings, you have to spend an hour to recap what happened last time. So it's a lot of broken experience. And we thought that when we do a design sprint, at least they test it out. There's some, I wouldn't say validation, but it's been at least tested. So at least you have some sort of navigation. Well, Itigo was like, they hated it. Great. Then we know that. So we don't have to figure it out much more. So we thought that would be the value created. There's something tested, and you have some sort of testing the hypothesis. So that's the value. And they could just say, that's it, thanks, we don't want to continue. And then was the third one, that if they want to do the third one, then we can test it on a bigger scale and then try it out.
Have you done any like more business model calculations on this, saying that if the kid gets answered this amount of questions per year, we will save this amount of time from the teachers, and the teacher costs this per hour, so that means that we can spend this kind of money?
Not specifically on that. We had the other three cases that was up for final. Presence control, what we call närvaro control, which means in school, just to check are there students there. There, in that case, there was a lot of numbers being presented because they can say, okay, each it takes this amount of minutes, etc., etc., etc. So that was a very calculating case. You can quickly show what potential benefits could be.
So if you spend 12 weeks building this, then we will try to get this lesson.
If this goes, we can remove X amount of minutes per class. And the third one was, which was quite interesting, was so the typical relationship between a teacher and a student is that the teacher was the one that most knows the most, and often the teacher is the one teaching the students. But what happens if this, what could it be reverse that? Could a student potentially be the teacher? Because in some cases, the student actually knows more than the teacher. And that comes very specific in digital stuff. So maybe someone knows programming more, they could teach. But there was no typical kind of KPIs or anything you can measure in that sense for it. But that became more like a philosophical kind of debate. Because then becomes the question, what is a teacher? And so of those three, the Liban case was the one chosen. But there was no KPIs, there was no measurements done to it. It was just to see that could a AI support and create that bond between the kids so they can start going to that as a source of information.
That was the first.
What is your dream for Liban then? Come on, when it leaves, will it live on? How will it live on? How does it exit your organization and live on in the department?
The dream of Liban will obviously be that when we're running the build sprint, it would be it would be enough success to feel like there's so much energy around it that people go, this, we want to continue on it. And what we will leave for Skolfritidsforvaltningen, as we're done with it, we will leave, the perfect requirement for any kind of project. Say, look, we've tested it. This is how it works. There's a prototype to it. There's, you don't have to, the requirement doesn't have to be specified in bullets. You can just, here you go. This is what we did.
It's not a feature request. No.
This is how we did. And this, and I think, and being a person from the other side, that brief would be lovely. Because that's something you can work with. Great. Okay. The only thing that brief misses is the amount of money. Once you have that, you go, okay, great. Because that's ambition level. We can work with that. We can create this. So that would be, that would be perfect if that happened.
Do we have anything else, Rigge? Do you have any more questions that you want to ask? Kamran?
No, I don't think so. I think you answered them all very well.
Do you want to ask something, Kamran? Or did we miss asking you something that you really wanted to talk about? That you were like, oh, we need to say this to the world before.
Yeah, I mean, what I would like to say, I'm not a person that preps too much. I'll usually go, I wing it. But what I would like to say that I would really like us to collaborate more, finding ways to collaborate, because by the end of the day, everyone's trying to be efficient. Everyone's trying to save money as efficiently as possible. And I think that Sweden is too small, is way too small. I mean, what is it, 10 million people? And if you compare it to larger capital cities around the world, it's like a larger capital.
Yeah, but it's, and especially especially from where we come and what we have worked with before, 10 million users hardly made a business case.
So what I'm saying is that I would like us to find new ways and trying to find ways of working, and it could be small things, but I think we just need to test it out and try working. Because I can't see that the future of the municipalities should be run by themselves. I think the challenges are not unique at all. We need to find ways of collaborating, and I would love that to happen.
We agree.
Stop being sort of, I wouldn't say narrow-minded, but stop sort of holding back your cash within your municipality and see it with the bigger picture. I think it's a challenge, and it's not going to be easy, but I think I can't see any other way in the future to be able to work.
Yeah. Super good.
So more work between Malmö and Helsingborg.
Yes.
Cool. Will happen.
That's my
good. Super happy that you came, Kamran.
Right. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Do you want to say something last, Rigge?
No, thank you for coming. It was really interesting. I think us Civic Lab can learn a lot from Hobbygy Works. Like, you've done a lot of the mistakes already, it feels like. So hopefully we can steal some of those.
Steal as much as you want.
Cool. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.